Minnesota's 830 WCCO. Keeping you up to date with the latest news every hour from CBS. The most up-to-date weather and discussion with your host, Brad Walton.
WCCO.
All right. Welcome to the start of our weekend moment. And this morning we are going to have something I've looked forward to ever since he kind of hinted at this next piece coming out. And prolific author, brilliant mind. And it's always a great conversation with our good friend, Professor James McKenney. How are you, Jim?
Brad, how are you?
Selfishly, I've been looking forward to this because you said, hey, we can go more than an hour and a half here this morning, and we're going to do just that because your new book is simply compelling. And I have to say that as we learn something about Jim McKenney that we have not heard before, you know, this is pretty amazing for me because I don't have the background you do when you talk about math and physics, and yet you are able to explain it in a way that even this non-math guy kind of gets it. So that's kudos to you.
Well, part of what I do is I have to realize, and part of my teaching background is teaching at all levels.
Yeah.
So I, one of the things I can do, you get a lot of people who are good in math or something like that, and you try and get them on the radio, and you can't understand anything they're saying.
Well, you've been promising this book for some time as
yeah.
we talk about this. And presenting really part of your past that the public has never seen and dealing with university-level mathematics. And many decades now of working on the computer, the computer industry and actually working in the computer telecommunications industry, and especially with computer protocols, encryption codes, et cetera, et cetera. And the new book is called Calculate Primes, and people are going to scratch their head and say, why are you doing a program on this? And yet we will, if people hang in there, this is so very relevant, not only in terms of understanding our past and our present, but it holds tremendous implications for our future. And you talk about your past, and the book itself is a brand new book. When was your weather book released? This is the first one in about 2 years?
Actually, about 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this one just somewhat happened. The private release of the Calculate Primes information was done quite some time ago, and that's within very esoteric mathematics communities. The patent, copyright, trademark work had to be done before the public release of the book.
Right.
The passing this information through trained engineers and mathematicians to get some ideas about how to present it to the public was important, and that's why the DVD came about. Because I presented the material, and then I got it into a form that the public can understand, and even well-trained engineers were, there's about seven pieces to this 2,500-year-old math problem, and there's about seven pieces to the puzzle that I had to put together to solve it. So I realized that the public is going to, you know, not understand and have a tough time with just the book, so I produced the DVD lecture, 3 hours, so you can just literally sit there and watch it and get the same information, basically, but in a lecture form, and I give more examples, and I talk people through it so they're much more comfortable, even people that are not mathematically oriented.
Yeah. I love the fact that you have included a DVD that is so clear. Even I was so intrigued by this. It's one of those that I'm going to go back and watch more than once for all kinds of reasons because it's filled with so much information. And the DVD actually comes with the book Calculate Primes, doesn't it?
Right, and so it's a new venture for me, putting a DVD inside a book, and the production of all of this was rather interesting, but I'm going to do more of these in the future, and I'm going to, I now have the production capability to do the DVDs and produce them myself and good camera equipment. And
yeah, well, it's beautifully done, and it's like, I really felt like this afternoon when I watched it again, I was in a classroom, and I guess in terms of the introduction here, we've talked about physics and we've talked about archaeology and other aspects of your other wonderful rites in your books. But as I said here in just a few moments back, you're talking about a side of Jim McKenney that we have not really understood or known before. I'd like you to go in a bit about that, because as we talk about physics and math, and we refer to you often as you are Professor James McKenney. You've taught the following mathematics courses at the university level, in addition to physics, computer science, astronomy, abstract algebra, linear algebra, matrix algebra, probability, and statistics for computing, mathematical logic, theory of numbers, calculus 1, 2, and 3, and the list goes on and on. Talk about this side of Jim McKenney that we have not known up until this book and this present moment, Jim.
Well, the other part of that, most of that was done in foreign languages.
Wow.
So I taught those subjects in second languages.
Uh-huh.
So I did quite a bit of moving around throughout my career.
Mm-hmm.
And and when we talked before about my other books, we talked about my physics background,
right,
astronomy, but the computer science part has been something I just, it really hasn't had a place to come out yet.
Yeah.
And then the other half of my career has been in the computer industry,
mm-hmm,
where I worked as a physicist, as designing and using my physics background in solid state to design telecommunications computers. I worked with teams of excellent engineers, many with many different talents, and we designed both the hardware and the software. So this was high-level design work. Everything from the microchip processors up to the full-size computers, and then building and installing major networks for private corporations, everything from the big oil companies to the big banks all around the world. And these were private networks, something that most people never even can imagine, that they're built in very secure computer rooms and transmit around the world via satellite or fiber optic links, etc. So my background has been, you know, very involved in the telecommunications computer industry. So what that's leading into is encryption, and that's the key word here. That there's many other implications, but once we talk about the prime numbers, they are involved in a process called encryption, and people go, well, what does that have to do with me? You know,
mm-hmm.
Well, just about everything you do involves encryption. If you go online on the internet, if you make a banking transaction, if you go to the store and buy bananas with your credit card, encryption is involved. And the prime numbers are used as a encryption keys. And what I've done is I've solved something that nobody thought would ever happen, and that is to develop a pattern, a calculating pattern to the prime numbers. So a third grader now can calculate huge prime numbers on the back of an envelope.
My.
In fact, this will be taught very soon in grade schools all around the world, and high schools and universities and colleges, and even amongst math professors, because nobody has ever seen this before.
Absolutely. The implications of what we're sharing here this morning and what this new book is about are, let's say, they're far and wide-reaching, aren't they?
When I first pre-released the book, I talked about the book, and I got the public prepped for the new book coming out, but I never pre-released titles or topics. And so I warned the public when anytime I would announce it, I would say, now when you first hear this title, you're going to go, what? I've been waiting.
Yep.
You're telling me this is going to be something exciting and I'm supposed to get excited about this. And you're going to hear this title and your reaction is going to be almost anger, because you're going to think, you know, you've been waiting for this great, you know, like my other titles were, like Atlantis to Tesla, the Colburn Connection, or something that everybody immediately understood some of the words, but calculate primes. But when you understand what this really means, you're going to fall off your chair. And as people learn about this, they're going to realize that this is an age-old problem, and solving it has huge implications for people. It also affects topics like genetics, where now we're starting to understand that genetic DNA code is a process building up from the basic carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen atoms, and building up in a regular pattern so that the DNA in your left hand is the same as the DNA in your right hand. And by the way, it's the same in the guy sitting over there, and it's the same in other plants and animals all around the world. And so the implication is, and this is a word that I actually gave some lectures before the book release on a topic called repeatability.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a huge word, meaning the things that we see here, whether they're snowflakes or diamonds or galaxies or DNA or the prime numbers, in fact, if you discover them on the far side of the universe, they're going to look just the same. So that is huge. That is a huge topic that science has never quite grasped. They always ask the question, what are things like over on the other side of the universe? Will there be planets like ours? Will there be life out there? And the answer is not only is it there going to be life and galaxies and snowflakes and diamonds over there, they're going to be just like they are here. And that is a giant step in understanding. So you can start to see the implications of the solution of this and the mathematical solution in the repeatability of all of these other unrelated, seemingly unrelated topics.
Yeah. No doubt. In some of the other areas where you have worked and people you have worked with, I wanted to note this too, and the fact that you've worked in Latin America, and we've talked a bit about that before in the past, and also working with high-level Russian scientists throughout the years, and a regular presenter at the American Geophysical Union meetings, and it goes on and on and on in terms of your list of credentials. Years at Cornell University, and 1979 to 81. And when did this first intrigue with prime numbers kind of get to Jim McKenney and you beginning to take on the mystery of prime numbers?
Well, when I was in high school, which is a long time ago, in the 60s, I was introduced to, and like anybody, let me explain a little bit about the prime numbers.
Right.
If you make a multiplication table and you put the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 across the bottom of the table and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 up the vertical left side of the table, then you fill in the boxes like 3 times 5 is 15 and 7, you know, and you put in the products of the various numbers. 7 times 7 is 49, and you fill the boxes in with the products of the different numbers along your axis. That's the multiplication table. The prime numbers are all the numbers that don't fit in that table, like 13 or 19. They only have themselves and one as factors. So as soon as you learn the multiplication table, you also learn about the prime numbers, the numbers that don't show up in the multiplication table, basically.
Right.
And so, then you're taught that there's an infinite number of prime numbers, because the Greeks proved that, very simple little proof. But then you learn that there's no pattern or rhyme or reason to the prime numbers. And mathematicians have worked on trying to find the pattern or rhyme or reason or relationship between the primes for 2,500 years since the Greeks first discovered the prime numbers.
Right.
And so basically you can represent numbers in terms of rows and columns. Like a 20 would be 2 by 10 sets of columns, or it could be 4 by 5, so you can represent the number 20 in various ways by the apples or soldiers or X's in rows and columns. And that's one of the interesting things, too, is you can represent numbers without really writing a number down. You can just put them in rows and columns. But if you take 1 away from 20 and have 19 things, there's no way to put them in rows and columns anymore.
Yeah.
The number 19 you can only put in a long column, 19 long, and there's no other little box shapes that you can arrange your apples or soldiers or X's or whatever. So they knew immediately there was something strange about these odd numbers that did not fit into neat rows and columns, and they called them prime numbers.
Yeah.
But they never could figure out the rhyme or reason. Like, you can have a bunch of them clumped together, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden there are hardly any, and then all of a sudden here they come again. And so everybody's been scratching their heads,
yeah.
like, how do you, you know, there's no pattern to these. In fact, a recent popular article by a famous mathematician who's still alive, currently working on prime numbers, he said they're more like a series of random lottery ticket numbers than any pattern or that has rhyme or reason.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what mathematicians had been looking at. In fact, in about the mid-1800s, when we had Riemann and Gauss and Cauchy and a lot of these mathematicians that gave us calculus and tremendous mathematics, they literally gave up on trying to find a pattern to the prime numbers.
Really? Wow.
They literally gave up, so they developed higher mathematical capabilities to try and talk about the prime numbers, but they literally gave up trying to find a pattern. So what I did, and I'll make this part relatively brief, a couple years ago, I decided a couple things, because I had been working on this problem since I was in high school, trying to find patterns and, you know, writing things out and adding and multiplying and trying to find the patterns in the prime numbers. And I said, you know, I got to stop because I got to forget everything I've done because I know there's a simple solution here. But I'm just, my head's crammed full of all of what these other mathematicians have done.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually put this problem on the shelf. And I said, I'm not going to look at it until I've forgotten everything I know about it. And I assume that there's a solution, and it's very simple and elegant and very subtle. And there's a mathematical tool, kind of a mathematical wrench or pliers that we don't have at our disposal. And then one day, probably a year ago or so, I sat down and started breaking into the middle of the prime number table, and all of a sudden it just hit like a ton of bricks. And I started working, and then I realized that ultimately there were seven pieces to the puzzle, and it took me another 6 weeks to actually work out the entire solution once I started getting some of the keys to solving this. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
Yes.
But more so about the implications of what all of this means.
One of the things that I kind of picked up, and we'll get into this and have you explain it also further as we get into the program here this morning, as you talked about repeatability and these patterns, you mentioned also the word subtle, simple, elegant when you talk about prime numbers. You also talk about the fact that these are wave-like in their nature, and there's a certain kind of symmetry associated with these prime numbers. Is that part, or at least in part, what helped you kind of, in that six-week period of time, crack the code, so to speak?
Yes, and ultimately I have an equation. I call it the generator function.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, you generate the prime numbers in groups. And the groups come out in families. They drop out of this equation.
Mm-hmm.
And you have entire families of prime numbers, and they're related. And here's what you do. You generate one group of prime numbers, and then you apply what I call the generator function to that, and you generate an entirely new set of prime numbers. And then you take that group, and you apply the same generator function, and it generates entirely new group of primes. And so these are families of primes that are built from old prime numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the funny part, is you only use addition.
Wow.
You don't use any form of multiplication. In fact, when I got all done, I found out that I had redefined multiplication in terms of strictly addition. And the key to that was defining what I call magic numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered that there are certain numbers out there which are not prime numbers, which I call magic numbers, and they're the key balancing numbers to the prime number system. So you add and subtract numbers to these magic numbers to get the primes. And once you get the pattern down, you generate a group of primes, you take this function, you apply it to the new group of prime numbers, and it generates the next family, and on, and it calculates all of them by simple addition. So, and then you can take, here's the other part of it.
Yeah.
You can take any number you want, any huge number with 2,000 digits in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take that number, and with a couple quick subtraction or addition processes relative to the magic numbers, you can determine if that number is prime or not,
really?
Or what its factors are.
And you don't need a supercomputer to do that.
Right, and that's the other thing that the public should understand is right now prime numbers are calculated with huge amounts of supercomputer computing time. And when you find a prime number, it doesn't tell you anything about any future primes or past primes. It just gives you that one number.
Wow.
And so there are teams of people that get research grant money, and they might have months and months of supercomputing time just to find one prime number.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's all out the window. You can generate families of primes in minutes with your just hand calculations.
Wow.
So
there
are a few things are going on in the background here.
No doubt. I'll tell you what, we'll come back and let's pick it up because there's much more to cover in talking about the practical understanding of past, present, and future implications of cracking the code, so to speak. The book is called Calculate Primes. The website, www.calculateprimes.com. Professor James McKenney, our guest. Much more to cover, and the practical side of this, the implication for your everyday life and living, will continue on with James McKenney in just a few moments on today's 830-WCCO. Okay, we are back. Professor James McKenney, Calculate Primes, and I'm going to make sure you get Jim up there. There he is. And always good to have Jim here. He's going to be with us for an extended visit here this morning. And his first new release here in 2 years, a book here that will be, I think, found in every university and classroom here in a very short period of time, along with the DVD. A DVD is included here. And many times we referred to Jim as professor because he is Professor James McKenney. We've talked about physics. Now we're talking about math and calculating primes. And the subtitle of the book, Direct Propagation of the Prime Numbers, The Oldest Problem in Mathematics Has Finally Been Solved. The DVD is just compelling. I spent some time with that this afternoon, Jim here. And again, it's so nice to have a DVD like this because as we talk about the word professor, and we sometimes laugh a little bit about Professor James McKenney, you truly are, and I've never seen you in this mode before, it is so teachable here, and it's understandable even for somebody like myself who's not a math guy, so to speak.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm glad to get that reaction because that was the intent of that DVD, is for people who are not math-oriented and who go, primes, that's not for me. But I wanted to get people through that. To give them an understanding.
Right.
And the other thing is the prime numbers, it's kind of a fun thing for people because I have two pages of prime numbers listed. The first 9,000 some prime numbers are listed in two pages in a table.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a little trick. I tell people, now look at that table of prime numbers because it'll never look the same once you understand the patterns in the primes.
That's right.
And you look at those numbers, and they're just numbers. And all of a sudden, you start looking at those prime number tables, and the DVD, I have some broken out, where I insert the magic number in the table, and then I start adding and subtracting, and I show you how the prime numbers are generated relative to the magic numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, that table, which was just random numbers, starts to make sense.
Yes.
In the patterns, in the symmetries. In the symmetry, mathematicians love symmetry.
Yes.
Like sine functions and galaxies have symmetry, all kinds of, you know, atomic nuclei have symmetry in the mathematics and in quantum mechanics. These symmetries and anti-symmetries come out in the mathematics, and it's so, when you really study mathematics, like to the level that I have or that professional physicists or mathematicians do, you learn the beauty and elegance in mathematics, properties such as closure, which means that when you're working with a number system, all of the numbers are related and it's a closed system. Let's put it that way. So nobody ever imagined in the mathematics world that the prime numbers had any pattern, let alone had symmetry and wave-like nature and repeatability and closure. And all of these mathematical properties that we have in very elegant number systems, the prime numbers also have them. So it's kind of fun for people to look at this table of numbers, which just looks like a table of numbers, and all of a sudden see the patterns start to emerge. So that's kind of fun. And then to understand the history, where you go back to, like, the ancient Greeks.
Yeah. How does the problem become a question, and how did it be for them? As you speak about this 25-year-old 100 problem, or this 25-year-old 100 problem, and talking about the work of the Greeks and a problem that has been around here for 2,500 years, how does the problem become a question?
The Greeks, as I said, developed number systems based on rows and columns. And they had something like our decimal system. It was a little different, but basically very similar. And so they realized that, as I said, the prime numbers were the numbers that you couldn't put them into rows and columns like the number 19. Mm-hmm. You could just put one string of 19 things, and there was no way to divide them into boxes or rows and columns. You always had one missing or one left over or something, you know. So they realized these numbers were strange, and then they started looking for patterns, and they broke their little brains on it. And then this problem really originated with the ancient Greeks. They proved that there was an infinite number of them, which is a very interesting little proof.
Right.
So that meant that no matter how many primes you found or discovered by basic brute force methods, there was always one more, and who knows where it was. It could be a long ways away, or it could be two away. So there was no way of really telling. And all the great mathematicians of history have worked on this problem. Mm-hmm. So that mathematically, the prime numbers are the basis of the entire number system.
Mm.
So how could you have the basic numbers that build all of the other numbers and not know anything about them?
Yeah. And why was it important for them to try and solve this? I mean, what was the challenge for them in the practical aspect of wanting to solve this 25-year-old 100 or this 2,500-year-old problem?
Well, it was kind of like they're the most rudimentary of all numbers.
Yeah.
Because they really make up all. Here's one of the fundamental properties of mathematics. Any number is built from a unique set of prime numbers.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the mathematical theorems that is proven. You can pick any number, big, small, whatever, and it has a unique set of factors that are prime numbers. So they're the building blocks of all numbers.
Yes, they are.
But there's no pattern, there's no rhyme or reason to them, there's no way to find them other than using a supercomputer. And what they do is just take the number 19 we've been talking about. You divide 19 by 2, by 3, by 5, by 7, all the numbers smaller than it, and every time you make a division, there's a remainder.
Right.
That's the key. And that tells you that there are no pure factors of the number 19, and so therefore it's a prime number. But it doesn't tell you anything about where the next one will be. In fact, the next one is going to be 23.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one will be 29. So the prime numbers are, there's just no rhyme or reason to them. How does one number, you know, the next number, how does that, there's no relationship seemingly between them. And so what I found are the numbers called magic numbers. I call them, there's actually a mathematical name The mathematical name is sequential prime product.
Okay.
But the number 6, the number 30, there's a number 2310 is a magic number. And I show in the book how to find these numbers. And then here's what you do. You add 1 and you subtract 1 from these numbers. Then you start adding some prime numbers, not all prime numbers, and the patterns of primes that you start adding and subtracting to these magic numbers is designated in the process, and all of a sudden, there are the patterns, there are the prime numbers, and the fact that you add and subtract the same numbers from the magic numbers gives you the symmetry. It automatically falls out of the process. And so you can go out and, for example, take a multiple of the magic number, 2310. Well, 4620 is twice that magic number, and you can start doing the same process from that number.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go out, and all of a sudden there are families of prime numbers that you generate using this process. And those families are related to earlier families. And the process, here's what's really interesting, is you start out with just 0 and 1.
Mm-hmm.
And you start the process out. You start with the number 0 and 1. You apply the generator function. That gives you a little group of prime numbers. You apply the generator function again. That gives you a bigger group. And every time you apply this generator function, you get another group of prime numbers, but a bigger group. And it starts growing and growing, and before you know it, you have identified almost all the prime numbers out to infinity within a very short amount of time.
Yeah. What moves a scientist like yourself when you talk about this this epiphanal moment, when you talk about thinking outside the box and wrestling, I guess, with this question for so long? What is it that moved you to kind of think outside the box and thinking that there would be some kind of answer out there after all these years, so to speak?
Well, I like everybody else, assumed that nature wouldn't have this basic number system without some rhyme or reason to
okay.
it. So I made the assumption that there was a pattern, was a solution, but all of these great mathematicians who brought us unbelievably complex and intricate, amazing mathematics, they all missed it.
Hmm.
And I thought, what is it that everybody missed?
Yeah.
And it turned out to be, actually, there's 7 pieces to the puzzle.
Hmm.
And each one of them, here's, I think, the key. Each one of them has a false lead. And you have to break through that false lead and go beyond it. And in the process, you generate false solutions, and you are 1 or 2 steps away from the full solution. But what most people did is they got to that false solution. They said, this doesn't work, and they walked away.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't walk away. I was able to see through the false solutions to get to the final solution. So it's like, imagine working a mathematical problem, and you know that you're getting wrong answers.
Mm-hmm.
But you keep going, and you go to the next level, and all of a sudden the right answers pop out.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
Somebody just called a few moments ago and asked the question, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Interesting that you note that genetics are a perfect example of false solutions.
It is. It is. It is. And that's one of the things, too, is the understanding that in these processes, we talked about galaxies and diamonds and snowflakes. Every one of those has the same situation. You end up with false solutions before you get the final solution, and they have to build on those false solutions. So, in fact, in genetics, where you talk about the chicken and the egg, isn't it interesting that encryption uses the same process where you take 2 keys, in this case, genetic keys, DNA, and you need 2 of them to fit together. And the answer is that as you're building these big DNA molecules, if you construct them, if they develop on the far side of the universe, the DNA is going to end up the same. But just like a snowflake, there's an infinite variety of variation. So they say, for example, no 2 snowflakes are alike. But the process that builds the snowflake is the same. And that is somewhat the key. The same with galaxies. If you look at all the pictures of beautiful galaxies we see out as far as the biggest telescopes can see,
right,
they are all symmetrical. They all have tremendous symmetry. There's all kinds of properties you see in these galaxies, but no two are exactly alike. You have warped galaxies. You have some with gaps in them. But if you take and measure across that central nucleus of the galaxy, there's tremendous symmetry. There's a star cluster over here. There's a star cluster over there. Or there's a gap over there. There's a gap on the exact same opposite side of the galaxy. So the processes are repeatable, and the end result is the same. You get the symmetries in the snowflake and galaxies. The diamond structure on the far side of the universe is going to be the same, but no two diamonds are the same.
Right. So what we're talking about in terms of numbers, prime numbers here, and calculating primes, is something that is very visible. And whether it's a diamond on our finger here in a ring, or it's a snowflake, and we've had plenty of those over the last month, haven't we?
Exactly.
And then you talk about the galaxies, these spiral galaxies. So we are observing these primes visibly when we look at a snowflake or a diamond, or this is all a result of, let's say, a manifestation of how in these various elements and aspects of Earth and sky and space, how prime numbers work?
Right, and a snowflake is a great example of a two-dimensional prime number, because what you do is you start out with a basic seed in the cloud system up high in the atmosphere.
Right.
Where the temperature and humidity conditions are just right. And oddly enough, there's something that happens in there. It's called an electric field. And it generates a little electric field around that seed. And before you know it, you have six. Remember, six is one of our magic numbers in the prime number system. You end up with six little clusters around that basic seed, and that's where the six symmetrical arms come out of. And there's a little feedback process going on as that snowflake forms. And they've reproduced this in the laboratory, where they take pinheads and they'll put them in a chamber, reproduce the conditions in a snowstorm. And the snowflakes form in very weird little strings, and they really don't form. But if you put a little voltage on that pinhead, all of a sudden there comes your six-sided snowflake. And
wow.
It's built on prime numbers, because the seed in the middle is one, and you get six cells around it. That's seven.
Yeah. As I hear you speak here, are you saying that the nature of the universe is kind of like, its essence is what this process really reveals?
Right. Let's take something a little more esoteric. Let's take quantum mechanics of the large atomic nuclei.
Okay.
Say you're building a big atomic nucleus in a reactor. There are false states in the nuclear reactor, but you need those to get to the bigger states where the atoms are stable.
Okay.
So once again, false states, intermediate states, and a final state that you're working to. And it turns out that the energy levels in the atomic nuclei match the prime numbers.
My.
It's in physicists and mathematicians actually meet annually at big meetings to try and make these connections. Why are the prime numbers related to the physical properties of atomic nuclei?
Absolutely. See, one thing that has always thrown me when you talk about math and you talk about, you know, false numbers, or so to speak, the false problems, or the different terms in which you talk about negative or false aspects of numbers. And help us understand that as a mathematician and teacher. How is it that something false can help validate something in a larger context that really is something that is real and true?
Well, let me take a simple example here. Let's take our magic number 6.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing is we're adding and subtracting prime numbers from 6. And in addition, 1. So add and subtract 1 from 6, you get 7 and 5. Those are both prime numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's add 3, which is another prime number. Subtracting, you get 3. Adding, you get 9.
Yeah.
9 is not a prime number. It's a false prime, but you need it to generate future primes, and then in the process, 9 goes away.
Wow.
It's very interesting. Or let's take another example. If you add 19 to 6, you get 25.
Right. 25
is not a prime number. It has factors of 5 and 5. 5 mm-hmm. times 5 is 25. But you need that number 25 to generate the number 31, which is prime. And as soon as that 25 is used to get 31 in the process, the next iteration of the generator function, 25 goes away. And this is what mathematicians never could see through. It was that one, it's that very thin veil of, you know, deception. And once the process continues, those false primes go away. And it's like genetics. We have many examples of failed genetic pieces in the chain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why you can't find, for example, say, missing links in the genetic structure.
Okay.
Because they didn't last long enough. They failed very quickly, but they were needed to generate the next step.
Okay.
And you see this coming out in the prime numbers, in atomic nuclei. You see it in building DNA. You see it in galaxies. You see it in the diamond development.
Mm-hmm.
You don't find half-baked diamonds.
Right.
But that doesn't mean there wasn't that intermediate step necessary to get the diamond into that final stage.
My. So this translates again into our physical environment, whether you're talking about snowflakes, diamonds, or galaxies even. What would this mean, let's say, for, say, black holes, when you talk about looking at the galaxies out there? Any implications for primes out there when you talk about dark matter?
Well, here's one thing that I believe, and that's dealing with dark matter, because I actually work in that area, too, as one
right.
of my areas of physics. And what I've discovered is that the reason they believe there's dark matter is because of the way spiral galaxies are, the light curves come back.
Mm-hmm.
They take the red shift and the blue shift of the arms. And it turns out that the galaxies really form from the center. They're like a big spray, like, you know, that lawn sprayer that
right.
sprays out from the middle, and you see that big sweeping. And I actually have a paper published in Astrophysics Journals. It deals with galactic formation, and it shows how the clouds come into the nucleus of the galaxy and then are sprayed out into the arms, and that's why you get the tremendous symmetry.
Okay, about 30 seconds here before we break.
But anyway, yeah, the dark matter is included because other models don't, they need some mechanism to create the symmetry.
Okay. Professor James McKenney, my guest here on CCO Radio, on this, the earlier part of a Saturday morning. And the website is calculateprimes.com. The book, 1995, will tell you how to get that. You can go to the website, calculateprimes.com, and Jim will talk more about that when he comes back. That includes, by the way, this three-hour DVD that literally takes you right through the book. It's excellent. It's a marvelous viewing, and talking about the DVD. More with Professor James McKenney in a moment.
WCCO 830, committed to the latest news and weather to keep you up to date. Plus, lively discussion on topics of the day. Now, here's your host, Brad Walton.
WCCO.
Okay, welcome back, Professor McKenney. How are you?
Brad, real good. I'm doing well tonight.
I love this three-hour segment that we're going to do here this morning because this book is so deserving. The DVD, by the way, is about a three-hour DVD that comes with the book. I want you to do a little infomercial here and talk about what people can get here and what they do get with this new and wonderful release that I think will be in every university and school classroom. This is going to be very, very popular.
Right, and I think I want to portray, too, that parents with kids, whether they're in grade school or high school or college, whatever,
mm-hmm.
this is going to be in their classroom soon. So the book was written for the general public. I want to stress that.
Yes.
The professional release is being handled differently. So this book is written for the general public. The DVD makes it very palatable,
mm-hmm.
where non-mathematicians can watch it, and people who are mathematicians will also get a lot out of this and understanding the prime numbers.
No doubt.
But the book itself is only, I believe, about 93 pages, so it's not a big book.
Mm-hmm.
And then the DVD is in the front cover. 3 hours DVD lecture, that's, you get to watch me talking and at a whiteboard giving examples.
Yep.
And then in addition on the DVD is a lecture that I gave on January 11th on the topic of repeatability. And I go into a lot more on this idea of snowflakes and galaxies and that topic of repeatability, that if you discover the prime numbers on the far side of the universe, just like a galaxy or a diamond or DNA, they're going to be the same. They're mm-hmm. going to follow the same generator functions. But anyway, all that's on the DVD.
Yeah.
And the book, so you get that. It's actually, the retail price is $24.95 when we spec'd out the pricing.
Mm-hmm.
But the introductory offer is $19.95. So that's a full $5 off. And plus, this includes shipping to the 50 states.
Wow.
So it's a pretty good deal, and that price is going to go up because
yeah.
we can't pay the postage, keep doing that forever.
Well, most of the time you don't, I guess you wouldn't even get a DVD for $19.95. Most of them are about $30. Here you get a DVD and a book for $19.95.
Yeah, and it's something that it's selling to everybody. That's one interesting thing. It's kind of like a T-shirt, you
right.
know, when you go on vacation. Everybody will buy a T-shirt. Well, mm-hmm. it's kind of like that because, you know, young people, grandmas and grandpas and everybody in between will get some benefit out of this book.
Yeah.
Also, it's not just a math book. It talks about the implications, about encryption,
yeah.
and how this affects your daily life, everything you do when you walk out the door, whether you're buying gasoline at the gas station or whether you're making a banking transaction.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever you're doing, encryption is involved these days. So.
Right, and it may be more involved in the very near future.
Yes, yes. For example, say, let's take a passport.
Mm-hmm.
They want to issue electronic passports. Everything today, they want to have electronic. Well, everything that deals with electronics, whether it's the internet or computers, is built on encryption codes to make that unique, that piece of that passport, electronic passport, or your electronic debit card,
mm-hmm.
all of it involves encryption, which is based on the prime numbers and based on the uniqueness of prime numbers that can only be calculated with huge supercomputers.
Right.
So all of that is going to change radically, and as a computer technician, I've always known those systems were faulty, but the book talks about that. So the book is more than just a little math book for,
yeah.
you know, math heads.
Oh, yes, that's for sure. And as I will, again, tell the listening audience, as I watch this as a non-math person, I'm intrigued by it, but it's never been my forte in terms of math, algebra, and geometry. And if you can explain it so Brad finds it exciting, I watched this for 3 hours, and I'm going to go back and watch it again very soon because what you do here that you've always done, Jim, is that you have, in any of your other publications, you bring the other sciences together as you talk about prime numbers here, and even mentioning, you talk about the fact that they're elegant, and then connecting it to snowflakes, diamonds, the spirals of galaxies, and the colors here, and the waveforms. All of a sudden, I understand why this is important, why it's amazing. And you talk about medicine, money, encryption in our contemporary culture here and the implications for us as consumers and what this means. You've always made it very practical, whether we're talking about Tesla or prime numbers, and that's what makes you so wonderful, not only as a professor, but as an author and a scientist as well. So tell people how, talk about the book here, 1995 to JMCC, write a check to JMCC, 1995. They can also go to the website, www.calculateprimes. Or you can send 1995 to JMCC and then mail it to JMCC, Post Office Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. That's N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota, 55392. I'll have all this information on my blog. I had some computer issues myself today, this past day, Jim. And
maybe a little encryption working.
Yeah. Come on over and fix my computer.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's spend a few moments here in talking a bit about this aspect of waves. And you speak of the light shift here in dark matter, and we're all moved so deeply by seeing some of these incredible pictures of these galaxies and these spirals in the heavens. And you talk about prime numbers here. Make the connection when you talk about symmetry and waveforms in terms of what we see with our eye and what's going on in terms of the world of physics and math.
Well, in nature, wave-like nature of particles and matter and light are, you know, they're just ingrained in everything we do. Sound is a wave.
Right.
The light coming from distant galaxies or stars is redshifted. So that makes people think the universe is expanding. So whether it's the subatomic world or whether it's somebody, you know, a train going by where it has that Doppler shift,
yeah,
going from a high to a lower note as it goes by, all of that, then, you know, we see it in our daily lives. But prime numbers with waves,
yeah,
that's what, I mean, you have to imagine me when I'm discovering these, and I'm sitting here going, I'm the only person on the planet that knows this right now. And these mathematicians have worked around this, you know, all their lives, and all of a sudden, I'm realizing that the prime numbers not only come out in groups, but they act like waves. And so let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. 30 is one of our magic numbers.
Right.
And so when you add one and subtract one from 30, you get 31 and 29. Those mm-hmm. are both prime numbers. Then you start adding 7. And subtracting 7, that gives you 23 and 37. Those are both prime numbers. And you continue adding and subtracting a very select group of primes. And as I said, there's a mechanism for selecting these. But here's what happens. There's only a select group around the number 30 that generate primes. Mm-hmm. It's a family of primes relative to the magic number 30. And it has a wavelength of 30. Mm-hmm. So when you go from 30 down to 0, that's a construction of prime numbers. And then you take that, I call it like a comb,
okay,
where the teeth of the comb are not evenly spaced.
Right.
And then you turn that comb around and you go out another 30 units to 60. You take that comb and you take it and put it between 60 and 90, between 90 and 120.
Mm-hmm.
And that comb pattern repeats all the way out to infinity.
Mm.
And that gives you a wave-like pattern of unit 30, of wavelength 30, that goes all the way to infinity. Then you superimpose on top of that the wave pattern of 6, which is a magic number. You impose on that the wave pattern around 210 and 2310. And so what you have are these infinite patterns of waves all superimposing on one another to give you the prime numbers.
Wow.
So there are waves of prime numbers that mm-hmm. are generated that go all the way to infinity, and there's an infinite number of these waves. So it would be like sitting in a pool and throwing out a rock, and
right.
then throwing out another rock, a bigger rock, and then a bigger rock. And these wave patterns are all going back and forth, and these wave patterns are going all the way out to infinity. Say your pool is, you know, really large.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these wave patterns are adding and subtracting from each other and forming these amazing wave patterns. That's how the prime numbers are.
And then there are waves within waves. I remember that part in the DVD today, and I thought, ooh, isn't this interesting? I don't know what it all means, but
yeah.
as you talk about these patterns, let's say you could break down the 30, and then there's a wave within the 30 and a wave within that wave that's below the 30. And
right. So let's take a prime number. I'll just grab my prime number table, and I'm going to read off.
Okay.
One prime number here. Let's go to 2,339.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that, to most people, that's just a number. Well, it turns out to be a prime number, and you could figure that out with your supercomputer if you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But let's add to the magic number, 2310. Let's add 29, and you get the number 2339. 29 is a prime number. And so if we added 31, which is another prime number, to our magic number, 2310, you get the number 2341. Mm-hmm. And those are just a couple examples. Now, that original number I stated, 2,339, you could find that number in the patterns of 30, in the patterns of 20, of 210. And of all of the other magic numbers, which there are an infinite number, that number 2,339 would be in that wave pattern of all of those, and it would be related to all the other families of prime numbers.
Mm.
So these are, there's an infinite number of patterns, and that number is related to infinitely many other prime numbers going all the way back to 0 and 1.
Why is symmetry important to mathematicians, and why is it significant here as you talk about calculating primes?
No one in their wildest imagination would have ever thought the prime numbers would have symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have never. I mean, when I saw this, I thought, this can't even be. Because most people were trying to find some kind of formula, the people that were crazy enough to work on this problem and waste their time, they were looking for some kind of formula that when you got from 11, then that would somehow generate the next number, which is 17. Or 13, I mean, and then the next number is 17, and then there's 19. And they were looking for some kind of equation that would generate the next prime given the prime that we already have. And it's not how it works. You have to go out, and this is why when I solved the problem,
right,
I just dove into the middle of the prime number table and these huge prime numbers way out there, and I started looking. I don't know what I was looking for. I just knew that there was something out there. And then I started noticing the patterns.
Yeah.
And then I understood the theory behind it and how to generate the magic numbers, and that was the key. Then I had to work backwards and find all the other seven subtleties of building the process and then put it in the form of a little mathematical function, and I break it down in the book and show you it's called the generator
mm-hmm.
function. And that's the patented, copyrighted,
right,
trademarked item out of the book. And it is a patentable process, calculating the prime numbers, because it has applications in computers and industry, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But, the wave-like nature, symmetry, no one would have, in their wildest imaginations, thought that the prime numbers would hold these amazing mathematical properties.
Yeah. I heard you on another program, and there was something about the tone of your voice, and as you speak it this morning, as I heard you before, and talking about the initial release of the book, when I heard you say that these numbers were subtle, elegant, and simple, and yet as I heard, again, the fact that this is, it's very much math, but it's also very much art in one sense, because you explain some of the mystery about some of these incredible patterns that we view with our eyes, and whether it's, again, a snowflake or a pattern there in the heavens when you talk about the galaxies. One question I had as you talk about snowflakes, they say that no two snowflakes are the same. And you talked really about repeatability, and you talk about probability. And how is it that, as they say, no two snowflakes are the same, and yet this aspect of repeatability is so very important, and it's a key part of what you say here as you talk about snowflakes and diamonds and galaxies. Explain the fact that, you know, if indeed snowflakes are indeed different, how can that also be a repeatable process with no two snowflakes being the same?
Well, it's interesting, and let's take identical twins, what we call identical twins in genetics.
Right.
Basically, what we're saying is the DNA breakdown of those two identical twins is the same, but if you know identical twins,
mm-hmm.
they're really not the same. There are little differences.
Absolutely.
And I have a chapter in the book. It talks about genetics. It talks about quantum mechanics. But there's also a chapter on snowflakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little example. And it's a great example even for school kids to do.
Right.
You take a pile of pennies and you put one on a table. And that's your basic snowflake seed. That's
okay.
The little thing that starts the snowflake up.
Get my change out of here, Jim. I'm put pennies on the table.
No mix any quarters or nickels. No, just pennies.
He only wants the quarters for the pop machine.
Yeah, I want those. So put your one penny down.
Okay, got it.
And now take six more and put them around in a tightly packed group around the initial penny.
Okay, do, 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 do. Can I cheat and use a nickel? And
No nickels. You could use all nickels.
Chris,
yeah, whatever
cents?
You use, they have to be the same.
I want to borrow 3 cents here.
Yeah, right.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, so now you have 7. That's a prime number.
I'll give these back.
And
okay.
You're fleecing the staff there.
Absolutely, I'm fleecing the staff here.
Okay.
I've got my other 3 pennies, Jim.
Okay, so now you have 6.
Okay.
Now extend out from the 6. There's like a 6-sided, from the kind of the little bump where the pennies are.
Right.
Extend out from the center, like in a radial direction.
Okay.
Put another, let's say, 6 around there, 6 being a magic number.
Okay.
And that would give us 13 pennies, another prime number.
Right.
Okay, now we have 13. So now let's add 6 again, and we'll have 19 pennies.
Right.
And what's happening now? The snowflake is growing outward.
Okay.
And we have 19, another prime number, worth of pennies. But now, if you took a room full of students or kids or bankers or whoever, and sat them down each with at the table with a whole pile of pennies, and as they started building the snowflake out, they started putting pairs side by side, or as they went out, they started branching out at a certain place.
Mm-hmm.
How many of those snowflakes would look the same if everybody just looked at their desk and didn't look at anybody else's? Within about 30 iterations of this, everybody's snowflake would be different.
Absolutely. I see.
And the process is the same. All you're doing is adding pennies out those 6 extended arms. And so that's how a real snowflake builds. And it's based on prime numbers, and they're all different.
Yeah.
But the process is the same.
Well, you mentioned also the fact that it's the creation of a snowflake. You mentioned something earlier about little zap of electricity to create something.
Right.
Yeah. Go back over that one more time, because that was fascinating, too.
They really didn't understand what caused this symmetry. How could, once you get out into the snowflake arms, and it's really building and it's growing, how does the arm over here know what that arm over there is doing? And they have amazing little branches over here, and you'll see it on all 6 of the snowflake arms. And they might join together. Sometimes some snowflakes are almost like a doily, where they're joined all together. And so how did the part over here know what the part over there was doing? And it's the same with galaxies. How on earth did the star system, the star cluster over on this side of the galaxy, which is light years away, maybe 100,000 light years away from the other side, how did they know that star cluster was forming, and on the exact same place on the opposite side of the galaxy, you have the same identical pattern of star clusters forming, or gaps, or whatever, or warping, or whatever's going on. So how did they know this? Well, the end result is there is an electrical connection in the snowflake, and that is provided by the electric field of the cloud.
Yeah.
And there is actually a little feedback mechanism, and they've discovered is that as the arms grow out, the electric field follows those arms, and that's where the water molecules will attach and freeze.
My.
So they, and that, as I said, they've done this in the laboratory, and they put a little pin in there, and there's a threshold voltage they put on the pin, and when you hit that threshold voltage on the pin, there come your snowflakes. And they're all different. But anyway,
I hope you make some more DVDs to really go into even greater depth. And this was just a great start here. And this is just an amazing beginning here. It's a paradigm as we talk about primes and what you've done here, Jim.
Well, you know, and also Minnesota, we're very familiar with snowflakes.
Absolutely.
And isn't it amazing of all the snowflakes that have ever fallen in Minnesota that no two would ever be exactly alike?
Yeah. Wow. And yet the process itself is repeatable.
Is the same repeatable process. And if we go to the far side of the universe, then, and I wonder, too, if, I mean, really, nobody's ever gone out and looked at every snowflake that's ever fallen. So I imagine there's people out going, oh, come on, there had to be at least two that were alike.
Yep.
And
the hair splitters out there.
Yeah, right, right.
All right, we're going to come back with you. Calculate Primes, www. Calculate Primes. We're also going to open up the phone line, 651-989-9226. Regionally, it is 800-327-8255. Nationally, 866-989-9226. Now, when you call this morning, give Chris the question that you want to ask. He's going to put that on the screen, and you can have a focus question here for Jim. We will open up the phone lines when we come back as we continue live and local on CCO. Okay, we are back. I returned my 3 cents to Chris here, and we did our 6 cents snowflake we did. And Professor James McKenney, my guest here this morning, opening up the phone line. Some of you have questions. Give that question to Chris when you make your call. And locally, it's 651-989-9226. And across the region, 800-327-8255. And nationally, wherever you're hearing my voice, it's toll-free. It's 866-989-9226. That's 866-989-9226. Much of this information that Jim is talking about with regards to the book and the website will be on my blog as soon as I can get it up later on today and get into my site and my blog. And many of you have referred to that, and finding the information, the websites, the numbers, etc., very helpful, and we'll continue to do that. Tomorrow morning, my guest will be Marilyn Jacks. We'll be talking about the find. And it is one of those special mornings here where when we talk about our conversation with Jim, he's going to continue on with us for a while. And we wanted to lay kind of a backdrop out there for each and every one, because this is revolutionary stuff. We're talking about solving the mystery of a 2,500-year-old problem. And that's pretty amazing as we speak about primes and the direct propagation of prime numbers. And the oldest problem in mathematics has been solved, and we're going to get into that further and talking about the practical implications as we talk about encryption in our present moment and for the future moments. We talk about money, medicine, credit cards, and lots of conversation about chips, embedded chips for medical technology, other places. We're talking about so many implications here, even for our infrastructure, and talking about encryption. So Jim is back here with us here this morning, and the website is easy to remember. It's www.calculateprimes.com, www.calculateprimes.com. And to get the book and the DVD all together, one price, $19.95. It's $19.95 and a check to JMCC, and you mail it to JMCC, Box 58, Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. Many of you listening on the internet as we're streaming here, I think, Jim, did you send out an email today? You're going to be on the air here?
Oh, I didn't email. I just posted it on my page.
Well, we have friends from Kansas. And
Great.
Have Sartell, see up there, not too far from the Twin Cities, and Jack in Minneapolis. So we're going to start taking some calls here this morning. Are you ready for that?
Yes. Can I say something quickly?
Absolutely, Jim.
Yeah, and I just want to mention the web page you're giving out there.
Yes.
The Calculate Primes. You can get to that from my regular web page, which is jmccsci.com.
Right.
But I created this subpage just for this book, and you can purchase it online also. In addition, many people like mail order.
Mm-hmm.
But if you like to order online, it's also available on that web page. There's a link to the ordering site.
Good enough. All right, let's go to some of the lines here. Let's go to, this is John in Sartell first, and then we'll get to Jack, and then Steve in Kansas. So everybody hang tight. We will get to your calls, and welcome to CCO, John.
Hello.
Yes.
Professor McKenney.
Hello, John.
I was going to say that there was something in Scientific American in the late 50s or early 60s where they showed a seed prime number in a square grid. It might be one. And then they wrote the whole number system around it in a spiral, and they got a large number of primes on the diagonals.
Oh, interesting.
And they also did it with the number 41.
Right, yeah, there's something about the number 41 that's interesting in patterns. And let me explain what people have been doing. The wave-like nature of primes and the repeatability of these, people have been working around this problem for, 2,500 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when people would, try different things like the spiral or the various other representations, they would pick out some of the little patterns, temporarily. But see, what happens is those patterns fade. They rise up and then they fade. And so you'll get a little glimpse of the patterns and then they fade away. And that's what has always tricked mathematicians, is they could never capture one of these wave patterns very long. So they found little glimpses here and there and then they would fade away. So the trick was understanding all the wave patterns and how they all add and subtract to create the overall system of the prime numbers all the way to infinity. So it is interesting. Like I say, people have worked around this. They've, in fact, there was I believe it was a field prize a couple years ago that the authors actually believed they had proven that there was no pattern to the prime, that there were these little individual patterns now and then, but there was no overall pattern. And it was interesting that no sooner had that prize been awarded than my paper came out.
By the way, try mapping the numbers on a honeycomb.
Yes. There's great symmetry in a honeycomb.
Right.
You are interested in Tesla coils.
Well, it's one of my topics.
Okay. I emailed you about the uniqueness of the Colorado Springs site for Tesla's experiment, and it being the only place in the United States where there is land at the antipode.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Say that one
more
time.
The other side of the world.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, it's the only place in the United States where there's land at the other side of the world. And I think Tesla intended to send an expedition to that island in the Indian Ocean to make observations.
Hmm.
Interesting. Yep. I'll tell you what, why don't you email Jim again? His email is on his website, is it not, Jim?
Okay, yeah.
And I'll have that also, John, on my blog site. If you can go to 830wcco.com or www.bradwcco.blogspot.com, you'll get to it that way. Or you can simply Google Brad, let's say Brad's blog at WCCO in Google, and
yeah,
you'll get to it that way, and all of Jim's information will be there, John.
Yeah, I'll look for it because I sometimes get so much email, and I have a small volunteer staff that kind of weeds through things, and sometimes things don't get to me, but I'll make sure we look for that.
Okay, John?
That's about a week ago.
Okay. Very perceptive stuff, and you're a good reader, John. Thank you.
Fine.
All right.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you for your call. Well-read guy going back and knowing some of that history, huh, Jim?
Yeah, oh, I know. It's so interesting because people, all have these pieces of information and they come out with them.
Yeah.
And, I'm getting just a flood of information coming from people that are finally, and that's what's going to happen. This is going to rattle cages around the world.
It is.
It's going to open up new avenues of thought that haven't been tapped in a long time.
And let me say to the listening audience, we just kind of scratched the surface. We still are going to get into some of the really good stuff yet in terms of what does this mean for now and the future. When you talk about trademarks, patents, money, medicine, and encryption for the future, because this has huge implications for all of that. Let's go next to Jack and Steve, then in Kansas. You're on after Jack, so hang on, Steve. And Jack, say good morning to Professor McKinney.
Hello, Professor McKinney.
Morning, sir.
How do prime numbers work in number systems that aren't based on 10 digits?
Well, that's an interesting question because that was one of the avenues that, for example, Gauss, the famous mathematician Gauss, had worked on because certain number systems are commensurate with working with primes. For example, say you have a number system based on 11, or say 30 or some other number. And they did notice certain patterns, and then there's a relationship between the prime numbers and that number system. So it has been one of the ways that people tried to work and understand primes, but it's limited in that they didn't really understand which number systems to work in or how those number systems were related. And when I found what I call the magic numbers, just like the prime numbers, create the next magic number. So you take one magic number and you actually multiply it by a unique prime number, and then you get the next magic number. So the magic numbers that I've discovered are related. And that would be a key, for example, to using modulus mathematics. It's what you're talking about, the number systems based on, say, not 10, but other bases.
Is it correct to say, I mean, is it even a reasonable question to ask whether 11 as a prime number in the 10 number system is a prime number in some other number system? I mean,
it's actually not. Let me see if I can think of an example. Let's use the base 20, which 11 would be 21, which is not prime.
Okay.
So that's a counterexample. But
does the theory that you've come up with work in different? I mean, do different number systems have different primes? But the theory that you've come up with works in those different number systems?
Yes, and here is the key, that the multiplication table, which you could represent as rows and columns without any numbers at all,
mm-hmm.
is the same, and the prime numbers, which are not in the multiplication table, are the same. So your representation of that number, whether it's base 10 or 20 or whatever, is going to represent that number. And
mm-hmm.
and so the number, what would it be, 20, the number 13 in base 20 would be 23. That would be prime. And it just, oddly enough, turns out that 13 in base 10 is prime, but they're not related.
Uh-huh.
13 and 23 are not the same number, if you see what I mean.
So anyway, the concept of primes is a universal concept and not just a number system 10 concept.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, you can do, and that's one of the things which it's too complicated to put in this book, but one of the things that I've done is go to an abstract system where numbers are not involved at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can represent them in geometric forms and things like that.
Mm.
Once you get away from the numbers, the prime number system, and that's what I was saying about repeatability.
Right.
If some guy on the far side of the universe started investigating prime numbers, he wouldn't have our base 10 number system necessarily.
Right.
He would have rows and columns, and the Greek numbering system was quite different, but they still understood the primes and their importance and their elusiveness.
Right. Mm. All right, Jack.
Well, thanks.
Hey, good questions. Thanks for your call.
I like when people ask those
absolutely.
Questions. It's like a classroom because
absolutely.
There's a lot of people out there wondering those.
Well, they're informed questions, too. You can tell some of these people have been thinking about this. They work in the area or they know something about it, and there is some intrigue out there when you talk about this because they understand the implications of this.
Right.
The other thing I want to get into as we talk about genetics is, before we get to Steve here in Kansas, just make a note of this, is the fact that as we talk about DNA and genetics, does this information have implications for genetic engineering and cracking the genetic codes when we talk about DNA also?
Well, the genetic engineering, I would call it reverse engineering,
okay.
understanding what there is there. I'm a proponent of not engineering genetics. I think we
yes.
should leave well
Le-
enough alone.
I totally agree.
but so I would call it reverse engineering, where we would understand what nature has developed.
Right.
And, you know, just a side note there, there's this division between science and religion regarding genetics and evolution and creationism. And I am of the opinion that the fight is really misdirected.
Mm-hmm.
Because there, if there's a grand design, then you can accommodate both genetics and DNA and the grand design in the same understanding. I don't think there's a conflict there.
Right.
I think people are making a conflict mm-hmm. where there really isn't one.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's get to Steve here in Kansas. Steve, thanks for waiting, and you're on with Professor James McKenney on CCO.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. Professor McKenney, I'm a big fan of yours. I've got all your books.
Thank you.
And I was one of those guys that was going, what, when I read the title.
Thank you for... So you know what I was leading up to when I was talking about. I had to prepare people.
Yeah, I was clueless about it. So I'm anxiously awaiting the book. And I'm just a layman in all this, but I'm curious what the ramifications are for, say, communication security in the government.
Yes.
The military.
We're going to get into that, Steve.
Right.
That is a giant topic,
and it's one of our topics for tonight. We're not quite there yet, but we're absolutely going to talk about that.
No, that's great.
Oh, it's the and just to quickly answer your question, we'll get into more of the details. But it's kind of like the movie Titanic came out, and I just watched it recently, and I thought, what a good example to use for answering that question.
Really?
Because when the Titanic hit the iceberg, the water started pouring in,
mm-hmm.
and the initial result was, there's some water coming in. But the end result was that the Titanic sank, and it wasn't pretty when it went down. But the other half of this, people say, well, gee, you're giving this, breaking this encryption code and making it public. Imagine if these encryption codes were broken and I were not a good person and I, can you imagine the damage that could be done before anybody knew what was happening? Because the assumption is that nobody can break these encryption codes. And they are breaking with the work that I've done. And it's not going to affect things overnight. I want to tell you that. This is not going to break down overnight. But if I've worked in this industry, the computer industry, and the encryption codes that we're using today are very frail, very fragile, and there are better ways to do it, and that's something I know about also. But, to briefly answer your question, there are some big, major league problems that are going to surface because of this.
Okay. One more tangent.
Yes.
What about, does this have any application with the theory of relativity?
Interesting question.
Relativity and primes. That I would have to give some more thought to.
Yeah.
But I would like to make an analogy, though, and I've thought about this. The special theory of relativity, Einstein was working with light in an experiment, the Michelson-Morley experiment, and he actually used some transformation equations developed by Riemann back in the 1800s, who, by the way, also worked on prime numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But out of Einstein's work, he did the mathematics, and out of this mathematics dealing with the light experiment, whether it's universally has the same speed in different reference frames, out pops this little equation, E equals mc squared, which is the fundamental basis for nuclear
mm-hmm.
reactions or the nuclear energy or nuclear bombs, etc. So when you're dealing with science, a lot of times things come out, just pop out the side, so to speak, that you never expected. The scientists knew, because of the sun back then, that there were energy relationships between matter and energy, but they never knew. Well, Einstein's working with light experiments all of a sudden produces E equals mc squared, and this is very much like that, in that the generator function, which calculates the prime number groups, can be applied to genetics, to subatomic physics. It can be applied to galaxies and diamond structures and genetics.
Mm-hmm.
There is a similarity in people have not even begun to comprehend the impact that this work is going to have on science in general.
Well, didn't the French prove that the speed of light is not a constant?
Well, you mean recently or?
I don't know. The last 10 or 15 years?
Yeah, those are pretty esoteric topics, and they
right.
go back and forth, believe me.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are various camps on that.
Yeah, but listen, I'll tell you what, Steve, thank you for your call there and good questions again.
Thanks
very much. Yeah. Let's see. There. Steve in Kansas here. See, they're all over the country, listening out here and
that's
internet
great.
And streaming all over. This is, I felt, as we headed into this program here, you talk about paradigms. I felt like I was introducing E equals MC2 this morning when you told me about this book because, and I'll tell this to the listening audience, Jim and I, we talk off and off the air because we kind of talk about the next show and then just for myself getting an education so I can ask some relatively intelligent questions when I'm on the air. So Jim has been my own professor here, but I asked him about this book a few weeks back and he goes, I can't tell you anything about it yet. And then when you were taking a short break over the last couple of weeks, you called and told me about this, and I said, wow. And I said, again, with my own limited understanding of math and physics, I knew that this is another E equals MC squared. This is just huge when you talk about its implications for the field of education, math, how we calculate primes. We don't need supercomputers anymore when you talk about calculating this as a result of this book and this work. And the implications here for the future, as you talk about Steve's question there and the future of, let's say, communications, you talk about patents and trademarks and I want to come back and talk a bit about the generator function and then encryption, because we talk about money, the market, the implications here for medicine. They're talking about putting chips in people, and they're already doing this with our animals. The encryption here that is so key to, you talk about the internet and encryption and security there. So as you talk about the positive side and the fact that if we can break encryption codes, you still know there are some other ways that we can keep our information safe. This is very important because you have pointed out really the flaw as a result of not being able to solve this 2,500-year-old problem. And because you have, we can now maybe have a more secure world as a result of understanding this. And also the fascination with just the art of, let's say, the numbers and the fact that you have made yourself so accountable. There's nothing more accountable than being on a spreadsheet with numbers. And as people watch this DVD that's a part of this book, they will quickly see and learn. And you say you have another edition here for the universities and the professors. But this is good for both worlds. It's a nice way to start. And you talk about teaching our young people the beauty of prime numbers and the importance of it and making that connection. You've done all that with this tremendous work, Jim.
Well, and that was part of the effort, was to boil this down into a bite-sized piece of information
yep.
that third graders could understand but would still be a challenge for people with a Ph.D.
All right. We're going to come back to you in just a moment. Professor James McKenney, and what about encryption? And what about the implication here for the markets and medicine? Back in a moment.
Minnesota's 830 WCCO, keeping an eye on the latest breaking news from around the world with CBS and discussing topics of interest with your calls. Now, here's your host, Brad Walton.
WCCO. Okay, we are back with Professor James McKenney here in this Saturday morning. And the first 2 hours, you may be scratching your head and say, why are you doing a program on primes? We've, I think, given you some good reason about that and some understanding about it. Talking about the beauty and the elegance of what we see as translating, I guess, some of this incredible beauty and understanding its connection to the spreadsheet of prime numbers. And this hour, our final hour with Jim, we're going to talk a bit more about the practical application for now and the future as we talk about encryption. This has huge implications. Talking about Steve's question earlier, as we talk about communications and medicine and money and credit cards. Pretty fascinating stuff here, Jim, and welcome back.
Thanks, Brad.
Yeah. Where do you want to start with this aspect of the implications for this? Because there are so many.
Well, let me give a quick tutorial on encryption.
Yes.
And that's a word probably many people are not even familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So encryption basically is an organized scrambling of data. And the situation is as follows. You're at a ATM machine or a bank or you're online on the internet. And the question is, how can you transmit data secretly or without anybody else being able to tap into it in any of these methods? Or say you have a computer chip for medical reasons or whatever other reason that they want to put in people or in a credit card or wherever it might be, how do you transmit that data so that it's unique and it doesn't get interrupted in the middle and changed and somebody else takes your identity? You're talking about electronic passports, et cetera, little magnetic strip on your driver's license, many, many different forms where your identity is locked in there and you don't want somebody else to get that, so it's encrypted.
Mm-hmm.
It's broken down into a code, and the standard way of encrypting information now is based on prime numbers. For a long time, 128-bit encryption was used, and that means instead of a digital number, you have a binary number, and it's 128 bits long, and now, of course, they're using bigger, larger ones, but it depends on what you're doing. Here's what they do. They take two prime numbers, and they're called the keys. And those two numbers multiplied together give you another unique number.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bank holds the big number and one of the prime numbers, and those are the keys. And then you, as a user, get one of the other prime numbers. That's your encoding mechanism. And so your data is scrambled based on that big prime number. And the assumption here is that nobody can figure out those two prime numbers as factors of the bigger number in a short amount of time. So these encryption codes are based on that assumption. Well, if all of a sudden you can calculate primes relatively easily, like this method that I've developed will do, and you could have a third grader breaking large encryption code prime number systems on the back of an envelope, all of a sudden you have a problem.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because your entire assumption has been that nobody can crack the big prime number products and factors. And that's no longer true. So then the next question is, well, how is this going to affect me or my transactions? The second thing is that someone would have to know what to do with these, how to get into the data path, and many other factors. So it's not going to create problems overnight. The people that are very worried about this are the people in, like, the military and in the NSA, in the high security agencies who do everything by encryption, and they have some very good computer hackers, you might call them, professionals, who are trying to interrupt and interpret and snare their data transmission. It could affect everything from cruise missiles to satellite transmissions of, say, Defense Department transmissions. But as I said before, you're better off knowing that this has been solved, that this problem is being made public, than to have it held in secret.
Mm-hmm.
And that's encryption is involved in literally everything you do today, whether you're buying gasoline at the gas pump or buying bananas at the grocery store or getting an ATM transaction, or this is real too, and there's a lot of people out there who know about this. There's a lot of people who don't. There are warehouses full of computer chips. These are microcomputer chips that could be injected into people in the way they would be injected. Now, you can go online or on medical articles and actually see the details on this, but they're so small they would fit down the barrel of a needle that you would get a shot, like
mm-hmm.
a flu shot or something.
Wow.
And embed it in your arm, and it's a little radio transmitter, and it can sense data about you, what your temperature is, where you are, and it would have your unique number on it, and that is encrypted. Once again, we come back to this encryption thing. So the reality of breaking encryption codes is huge. It's so involved in everything that is done today that it's part of everyday life, even though most people may not be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, you talk about the everyday connection, even if you're not into, say, some of the areas of medicine and understanding what you just spoke about there with regards to chips, encryption key, also when you talk about internet security.
Right, and transactions, whether the banks are transmitting data or whether you're on the internet and doing, say, internet, your banking online. That's a good example of encryption, when that little window pops up on your screen and it says you are entering a secure site.
Right.
You have just gotten what's known as a cookie, and that's a computer term for a piece of information being sent out to your computer. And in that cookie is an encryption code, and you are now sending encrypted data when you're on that secure link. So all of these deal with encryption, and they are based on the prime number encryption mechanism.
Hmm. Is this information going to really cause a huge paradigm in terms of how we do write security for, let's say, credit cards, and you talk about the other ways that we need to secure information in this information age? You talk about the internet and credit cards and any medical information, national security. What are the implications of this as you talk about the changes that need to be made as a result of understanding in a greater way now the significance of what you have discovered here with regards to the code of prime numbers?
Well, here's something that's very subtle, and most people, it'll take them a while to actually understand this, so they probably have to repeat it about 3 times, 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
For example, our money, the value of the money is not contained in the piece of paper you're holding. It's contained in value that somehow else is recognized as a value system for that monetary denomination, whether it's a $10 bill or $100 or a $20 bill, whatever. In the old system of money, if it was a gold coin or a collector's coin or whatever, the value of the money is in the coin itself. Now, the reason for encryption and money itself is encrypted. The printing on the money is done in such a complex fashion that you can't just go out and copy it very easily. That's a form of encryption, and the reason you need that is because the value of the money is not in the piece itself. There's no need to encrypt printing on a gold coin because the money is in the gold coin.
Right.
So encryption has some very significant aspects to the way we deal with money itself or transmissions. When you're moving, say, credit card money, that's money that really is a number in a ledger in a computer bank somewhere. It's not a gold coin, and the gold coin doesn't get moved into that guy's vault when you make that transaction. A number gets moved. And there again, the need for encryption is almost like the need for printing this complex pattern on a dollar bill, because the value is not in the dollar bill itself. And that's a very subtle but real aspect of modern society.
Hmm. Can you look into your crystal ball for a moment and say, where will all of this take us, and where do we go from here? Because things have picked up a pace here that almost seems beyond the reality of what we can deal with on a day-to-day basis. When you talk about the speed of transactions and you talk about transferring money or getting money into PayPal and trying to transfer that into your regular bank account, and you talk about medical information and, let's say, our privacy on many different levels. I mean, this has implications with regards to infrastructure and our pocketbooks. And look into your crystal ball here. And where are we going to go with all of this, Jim?
It's a difficult situation because literally any encryption system can be broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what this points out. It's, like I said, like the Titanic. I remember in the movie they were saying that nobody can sink this ship. And, well, got news for you. the Titanic did sink.
Yeah.
And this is very similar in that, as I said, the breach is in the hull, the water's coming in,
mm-hmm.
and the people who do encryption codes are very aware of this. And there are other ways to do encryption codes, but here's the problem. All of the systems that are set up out there that are based on this prime number form of encryption, they're all set up. How do you go out and how do you know where all of these encryption systems are and how do you replace them?
Right. Especially with what we call the embedded systems, right?
Right. It's in hardware. It's in, like, say, military hardware or in satellites. And absolutely, it's embedded in the hardware itself. And how do you change that? And the answer is you don't. So it's a very strange problem. It's kind of like, I guess I won't use other examples because this is very unique in that so many assumptions have been built on so many systems have been built on the assumption
that it can't be solved.
That it can't be solved and it wouldn't be broken. And now a third grader can break these systems. Not that a third grader would know what to do with
it.
Yes,
right.
But there are people out there who would know what to do with the ability to calculate prime numbers.
When you talk about the magic numbers, is that a part of what you talk about your generator function when you talk about this equation of prime numbers? The magic numbers, so one part is I watched the DVD that the meaning of those, the significance of those.
Well, the magic numbers, they were one of the things I discovered as the central pivotal numbers to the prime number system.
Okay.
And the generator function, part of what it does is every time it calculates a group of prime numbers, the very last thing it does is it goes back and it generates the next magic number. And it's a system of developing, and you start out with 2 as a magic number. And then 6 becomes a magic number, then 30, and it goes on and on.
Right.
But what happens is it's part of the generation process. And that's kind of the beauty of the whole system is that it generates itself. It takes the last iteration of all the primes and the magic number, and it generates the next magic number, which is used to generate the next group of primes.
Mm-hmm.
So they are central to the prime number system. As I said, for example, 30 is a magic number.
Yeah.
You add and subtract 1 and a group of prime numbers from 30, and you generate a whole group of prime numbers.
Okay, yeah.
And so they are pivotal, and they are the ones that tell you that the prime numbers are symmetric. The prime numbers are symmetrical around the magic number. So they're key and pivotal to the prime number system. And
absolutely.
And it's one of the key discoveries that allowed me to crack this problem.
You know, we touched on that earlier, and I'd like you to actually detail a bit more, speaking personally about this journey here as you began to really focus in on this, talking about this aha moment, and then spending the next 6 weeks and really taking this the rest of the way. And talk about the scientist that thinks outside the box to come to grips with so the solutions that you've come to here when you talk about prime numbers and calculating primes. You've always been one to think, let's say, in a different way as a scientist and include some of the information when you talk about, let's say, looking at the heavens, including some of the information that the heavens reflect or we find reflected about the heavens in the archaeology of this planet. And you've kind of brought those two things together, as you've done here now, with the prime numbers. Talk about this journey when you had that aha moment and then taking it the rest of the way over the next 6 weeks. And how did you keep the lid on for you personally? Did you sleep at all?
It was tough. I, of course, busy with so many other things, radio shows and, appearances and, just keeping my own life intact. Which is not easy in itself, but the actual work, excuse me, I spent some of it on a deck, I have to give some credit to an Irish, a young Irish lady. Her name is Keeley, and she kept me supplied with paper and occasionally in a beer.
There you go.
As an Irishman, you know, have to relax when you're
By
work.
The way, happy St. Patrick's Day,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day today.
It is.
So, but anyway, once I got my teeth on this and I said, I've got it. I know I've got it. I've got to work this out. It was like the hair was standing up on the back of my neck.
I bet it was, Jim.
Because, yeah, it was one of those things where I knew what I did and what I was on to. And there was no, it was just a matter of grinding it out.
Yeah.
And it turned out that there were 7 very unique pieces to this puzzle. And I'll just name them now this is to give you an idea how this is going to be presented to professional mathematicians if I gave a lecture. And these are the 7 pieces of the puzzle that I guarantee you mathematicians are going to have their jaws hanging out when they understand it.
Okay.
You start with 0 and 1. That's number 1.
Okay.
Number 2, you need false solutions. The false primes are part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
There is something called umbrella groups, and I call them umbrella groups. A group is a system of numbers in mathematics. That's a mathematical term. And I call them umbrella groups because they look like an umbrella. When you find a magic number and you start building the prime numbers around them, they're symmetrical around the magic numbers, and they look like an umbrella when you're mapping them on the number line.
Mm-hmm.
So the umbrella groups of symmetrical prime numbers around the magic numbers, the magic numbers themselves and the identification of these and how the magic numbers work and why they are unique numbers that are used to generate the prime. So number 4 is the magic numbers. Number 5, redefine.
Okay, so number 3 is the umbrella groups then?
Yes, number 3 is umbrella groups.
And number 4 is the magic numbers.
And magic numbers and relative primes. Number 5 is redefining multiplication. And that is something that I know people are going to fall off their chair because no longer do you multiply numbers. You go out to a magic number and you add numbers to create multiples.
Okay.
And that's kind of a strange thing. So
that's revolutionary by itself.
Right. I'm going to give you an example.
Let's tackle that part when we come back after the news. Let's go on to 6 and 7, and then you can grab that, and we'll get into that that example here of redefining multiplication.
Right, and the factorization.
The factorization.
And then 6 is the generator function itself, which is the little mathematical formula which generates the prime numbers around the magic numbers. And then the new definition of prime numbers. So instead of defining a prime number as a number which only has 1 in itself as factors, I literally redefine the prime numbers.
Yeah.
So those are the 7 pieces to the solution.
When you talk about encryption, and I'm just thinking out loud here, when you go back to number 1 here, these 7 different elements here, the process, isn't most computer code written in, you talk about 0 and 1, the significance of that?
Right, and that also comes back to the question that who had asked that, one of the callers, about is it the same in the various number systems, and the binary system is just another number system based on 0 and 1, and you can represent any number in terms, and that's computer language.
Yeah, this has so many different tentacles. When we come back, let's talk about the redefinition in terms of multiplication, and I want you to talk about your other books, and then also to talk about a few of the other pieces here with regards to the people that follow you but don't honor your, let's say, the originality of your work here, and I'll let you detail more about that when we come back.
Great. Well,
you know what I'm talking about.
That will change.
The imposters.
Yeah.
Or the wannabes.
The wannabes.
There you go. Listen, Jim, hang on. I'll put you on hold, and we'll come back here in just a few moments. We'll give out the website, and Jim will talk about his other books, and we'll do in our final segment coming up here a bit of that new multiplication that's a part of this Calculate Primes. The website, www.calculateprimes.com. Professor James McKenney, this is a paradigm. This is huge. It has incredible implications. This is just the beginning here, and we'll come back and we'll talk in our final segment with Professor McKenney, live and local from the station serving the nation, 830-WCCO. Okay, we are back in that final segment with Professor James McKenney here on CCO. Jim, this has been just a sheer delight, like all of our programs, and I never thought I'd have the privilege of speaking with you on something that is so new and that's going to be so huge when you talk about from this point on. This is, you talk about the hair standing up on the back of your neck as you did this work over a six-week period of time, and I think I would have needed a few beers, too, working on
it. It was a way to keep calm while this was going on.
What did it feel like when you really found the master key here? That had to be like, in all your years of research and work, this aha moment had to be just like, oh, my. And although one couldn't really articulate all of the tentacles of what this meant, you certainly were more than aware of it, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and because having worked in the computer industry and telecommunications, and but just the literally, it was like my blood was boiling and the hair was standing up in the back of my neck, and I knew I had cracked this.
Cracked the code.
And I knew who had worked on it.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't just a light group of people.
Well, the other thing is, by putting this out as you have, for the people that have been naysayers and the people that have been your critics for so long, this really makes you accountable. And it's not that your other work has not made you accountable, because I think any time we write and put something out, we make ourselves accountable to our critics, and there's always the debate and the subjective part. But this stuff is it's pretty straightforward, and you have solved the riddle here of a problem that's been with us for 2,500 years, and that is huge. And you put it out here in a publication and a DVD, and you've just outlined, as you will be speaking, I'm sure, to many individuals in education, the professionals that work with these numbers, and you have made yourself accountable in a way that you never have before, really.
Well, the one thing that I think is people are going to find amazing here is mathematicians. There are teams at MIT and Harvard and Stanford working on this problem. Mm-hmm. Teams of the top mathematicians in the world. So everybody imagined that the solution would be so complex that maybe 10 people in the world would understand it.
Right.
The thing is, I put it in a book that a third grader will understand.
That's right.
So this is what's going to be the biggest shock of all. And the people, there's going to be a lot of dented foreheads,
mm-hmm.
with people hitting their forehead and going, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Whenever I go to hear somebody talk about being an educator, a professor, I want them to take on their critics. I want them to take on, let's say, the people that would, let's say, be your biggest challengers. And you take that on in the DVD. You talk about some of the things in terms of false primes, and you talk about redefining this, and you talk about why, and you talk about how, so you give them the tools here. And I find that a real mark of integrity that I've always enjoyed in terms of our conversations here. So there's so much here that I want to go back over, and I'm sure that each time I watch this here in the next few weeks, I'll get something more out of it, because the DVD, again, to those of you who are joining us, does come with the book. So, fascinating stuff here. And, Jim, I'd like you to take just a few moments to talk about your other books. Before we do that, though, let's come back and talk about step number 5 and talk about the redefinition of multiplication. And we had an example here just before our break.
Right.
And you have the numbers now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's 3 in the morning. So
yes.
You can tell my brain is shutting down. Well, no, let's take the number 81.
Okay.
And that was a number, of course, 81
right.
is 9 times 9,
right.
Or you could say it's 3 times 27.
Okay.
So anyway, 3 is a factor of 81. Now subtract 30 from 81, 30 is one of our magic numbers,
right.
And you get 51. 51 is equal to 17 times 3. So here's what I'm saying is, if you add any number to 30 that has factors that are the same as the factors of 30, which are 2, 3, and 5, then the end result number, which in this case was 81, will have a factor of 3. So it's a different way of factoring. So the product 9 times 9 equals 81 is no longer the way we look at 81. We look at 81 as equal to 30 plus 51. So I've redefined multiplication in terms of addition. And now, remember the prime numbers, the ones in the table that didn't fit?
Right.
We defined those in terms of addition relative to the magic numbers.
Right.
And they are unique in that there's no other number other than a prime number that will give you that number. So let's look at 31 plus 30 is 61, and plus 30 again is 91. So we have these whole families of prime numbers that are 30, that has a difference of 30.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mathematicians have played with these type of things before, but they've never understood the central idea of generating all the prime numbers from these newly discovered magic numbers.
Wow. Now, one other question here is, you talk about missing links earlier. You talk about repeatable process. Are these numbers here that you're talking about, do the magic numbers hold any correlation with, when you talk about repeatable process, the missing links?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
And when you generate the prime numbers, you generate false primes. In
yes.
fact, the squares of primes always turn out to be false primes. They are always required to generate the next group of primes, and then they go away.
My.
Every square of a perfect prime is a false prime.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it? You know, so the
yes.
square and the squares of primes also come in when there's a process in this generator function called solidifying the primes, where you know for sure that the numbers in your group are for sure prime numbers without thinking about it. You just know that all these prime numbers are primes. They turn out to come in groups between the squares of perfect prime numbers.
Yeah.
And so the prime number squares turn out to be extremely important. Then you relate this to all the higher mathematical functions like the Riemann hypothesis.
Right.
One of the greatest unsolved mathematical problems in existence,
mm-hmm.
and it's related to these squares of prime numbers. So it's so much is coming out of this.
Yes,
mathematicians are going to be 10 to 20 years before they digest the initial wave of what this means.
Well, I hope you keep writing, sir. I do, and more DVDs. This is wonderful, and I'm honored here to have one of the first conversations with you about prime numbers and this huge discovery. It's like E equals MC squared, and I feel like I'm talking to Einstein himself some days, except you're always one who writes for, say, the common person. You write to the people in your own field, and you can speak to the other professors like yourself. And you no doubt will be doing a lot of that in the future. But I thank you for making what you do and what you write about in all of your publications so easily accessible for those of us who maybe don't have the education in the background or the understanding that you do, Jim. It's just it's very meaningful, and what a book.
Well, thank you. And once again, I have a belief that nature is simple. It has simple solutions, but they're very elegant and subtle.
Yes.
And they are understandable by anybody.
Yes.
So that's one of the philosophies I always work under, and it's really always come out to be true.
Yes. The book and the DVD together, 1995, they can write a check to JMCC, Post Office Box 58, and then it's Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. NAVARRE, two R's there. Navarre, Minnesota, 55392. A check for 1995 to JMCC. And you have your other books out there. Do you want to take just a couple of minutes to talk about your other publications? Or we can find those on the website, because your other website, along with Calculate Primes, is jmccsci.com.
Right. JM, as in Mary, C, two C's. S as in Sam, mm-hmm. C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo, seven letters, JMCCSCI. And that, by the way, links to the Calculate Primes page.
Okay.
But the other books, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, dealing with the electrical nature of the solar system. Then there's a smaller 60-page pamphlet called Surviving Planet X Passage, which, in addition to other things, shows you how to create a calendar from a pile of rocks.
Yeah.
And then the third book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, which deals with ancient science and Tesla, etc. And then the fourth book is the weather book, Principia Meteorologia. That's kind of an intimidating title, but literally is written for the public. It's
absolutely
a 300-page book dealing with Earth weather and solar system weather, and it tells you how electrical conditions in the solar system drive our weather systems. Mm-hmm. And then this book, which I tried to prepare people for, was a totally different direction. And as the caller said, he was like, huh? When he first heard the title, like, I waited for
it. Oh, me too.
And it was like, and I told people, when you first hear the title,
yep.
you're going to think, I can't believe it. I waited for this.
Yeah.
And but when you find out what it really means, it's huge.
Yeah, it is. Jim, thank you for your work. Much success to you. And I think that's just a matter of time, and it's on its way already, because this is huge. Thank you for this morning. You get some good rest. I'm going to put you on hold. I'll talk to you off the air.
Okay, Brad.
And I look forward to the next program where we can talk planets and comets and some of the other questions that you solved for us with regards to what we observe in the heavens.
Well, and good night, everybody out there in radio land.
Absolutely.
And, happy St. Patrick's Day from a true Irishman. So.
Absolutely. Go out there and enjoy the day.
Okay.
I'll put you on hold here, Jim, and we'll come back in just a moment as we continue live and local from the station serving the nation, 830 WCCO.